Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, November 6, 2019.
First agenda item is approval of minutes, and I think it's 2 months worth of minutes.
Alright, so the first thing we're going to go through are cost reduction recommendations that we've kind of been purviewing the last couple of months. So this is just a recap from our September meeting on the areas of where we were looking to have some reduction in costs. So the first area that we talked about before, salary and benefits, are kind of broken up into two areas. One is obviously our collective bargaining agreements. So one of the goals is to make sure that entering into these agreements that they're fiscally sustainable and just the future impact that they're going to have on budget and as well as going into negotiations for the contract after that. So you want to make sure that you know, you're in a place where you can make sure that you're looking at the numbers and you're still meeting the needs of the district. So one of the things that was highlighted in the 19-20 year, we entered into a three-year agreement with CASA, which is our administrative agreement, and there was some restructuring and changes made, which allowed for cost savings over that 3 years. So the anticipated savings for the 2021 budget is about $8,000. We are still in, we're currently in bargaining sessions with our CBA team. That agreement expired June 30th, so right now everything is status quo. That's how we're operating. We will be getting into bargaining with our BEC group. That will probably be around January or February, but their contract expires June 30th of 2020. So the second part of the salaries and benefit pieces are always just analyzing personnel. So just going through and making sure that we're efficient in our staffing and anytime that we can operate in an area that we can restructure or we can save for attrition is something that the administrative team does. And again, I always preface all these cost reductions by saying we do make sure that we have an understanding and an impact so that it's not money first, that we're making sure that we're taking into consideration student engagement, student learning, and the students. So we obviously aren't going to recommend a cost saving that is going to negatively impact student achievement or student learning. So the personnel analysis is obviously in all areas, administration, professional staff, which is our teachers and support staff. And obviously this is not a public discussion because we are talking about personnel and it's preliminary right now. So what I can say is based upon some recommendations that we have, that we estimate our savings, that will not require attritional impacts is about $386,017. And then there's also some recommendations that we have that is dependent upon attritional savings. Just as a reminder, we will not know that information. April 15th is the deadline for people to submit retirements, so it's at that time that we can really get a true understanding of what attritional savings or what moves we can make and make some savings there. So that's why I made sure that I split that out, because I don't want that $1.1 million to be deceptive, because there is a big chunk of that that, you know, we're going to have to wait and see where our retirements land in order to make moves if we move forward with those recommendations.
Is that an estimate based on past experience, or where did you get the 757 if you don't know it?
The estimated savings is based upon recommendations of staffing.
If we were able to shift this person into this position, it would save us money.
Okay.
But if that position is not available to shift that person in, that's what the challenge is, so we won't know that.
Yeah, so there's been identified areas that could possibly shift into positions. However, it is all dependent upon that area opening up to shift that person in.
Gotcha. So I'm sorry, that does not include then the attritional savings we'll get from people who retire, for example.
And then are replaced by people that are lower on the scale?
Yeah.
No, that does not.
So that would be an additional potential.
Mm-hmm. And just again, that information is really not going to be known until about mid-April. So you just got to kind of be patient with that piece of it. But there are some estimated savings that we have identified that do not require that attritional savings. We've talked about the late buses. Elkins Park is about 32,007. And then what we've actually implemented for this year and what I'm tracking right now, the high school is doing a very, very good job. And it's a big kudos to Mr. SUNY Blackwell, our athletic director. He takes a big part in that. So they really have been utilizing two buses on the runs. And they are getting capacity. So there are times when I'm looking at the ridership that there's 40 students on the bus. So they're filling up the buses instead of sparsing it out and having 20 students. So they're doing a really, really efficient job. We just got the two new athletic directors down at CBK that have that extra duty on their pays.
Oh, good.
It used to be Mr. Dave Jones and Rob Graham. Now is Chris Nestor and Jeff Rashad.
Okay. I know who the two individuals
are. Yes, so those are extra duty positions. So they were put into those positions, and myself as well as Mr. Custer are working with them. The way that they're analyzing on how to order buses is how many students are participating in sports and activities, which I'm like, you can't assume that every student is going to take the late bus, so stop ordering late buses to accommodate, because like you guys aren't running as efficient as the high school, and the high school has double the people that you have. So, and even the ridership, when I'm looking at it, the high school has more ridership, but they have less buses. So we're going to get ridership information to them weekly so that they can start analyzing the numbers. But I definitely told them that moving forward, they can't have more than two buses on Friday. They were starting to do that. So Mr. Custer is taking that over. So if they need more than two buses, they have to get permission from him to order the buses. And it's just because based on the ridership numbers that I have right now, Fridays are very, very light. I think we ran two buses with 20 students total between the two buses. And that's what I'm trying to get them to understand. So once I kind of gave them the data and they started looking through it, and I'm saying, you should have two buses here, one bus here, what they kind of understood. And I said, you can't base it upon the number of students that are participating, because not everybody rides. Use this data and start making decisions this way. So I think we'll start to see some savings. And one of the things I also gave them is when we get our monthly invoices, so I'll use October as an example, our late bus expenditure was about $34,000. Cedar Brook, their expenditure was over 50% of that. That should not happen. So when you start to see those numbers in writing, you're like, okay, that doesn't make sense, because we have 700 and some students in our school. The high school is 1,400, and we're spending way more. We're spending more than EP and the high school combined. So I'm hoping that is going to help and start to bring that number down.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
For the elimination of the EP late buses,
yes.
I know that we offer late buses, but other school districts don't for that age.
Correct.
Eliminating those late buses from an equity lens, do we know what the impact will be for students not being able to participate in after school activities?
We're getting a meeting scheduled with Mr. Wallace, and he's relatively new, so we had to give him some time to kind of see how everything worked and kind of go through some of the late bus experiences. So we're going to follow up with him to get his feedback and kind of get that information, you know, to see kind of what the impact would be.
Okay. Thank you.
So the last area is reducing overall cost of the 2021 student services contracted services agreements, and that estimated savings is about 91,000 and some change. So looking at this from a very high level lens, we're looking at a total estimated savings through November that has been identified. And again, there is some dependency on attrition. I think it was about $700,000. We're at about 1.3 in estimated savings if we move forward with the recommendations. And again, this will be an ongoing conversation. Obviously, next month, the first look at the preliminary budget will be presented. It'll be voted on in January. And then, you know, there will be continued conversation as we start to really identify and solidify the recommendations that we're going to do. And then that's when we kind of dig down a little bit more to really identify what those cost reductions will be. But at this point, it's, you know, we're exploring, we're recommending, and we're still compiling information, such as the one question that you asked about impact, before we solidify what recommendations are going to be in the budget. So we do have some time. January through about April is when we have those decisions that can be made. And if decisions are made sooner than later, then we can have those conversations and start to roll that out so people know impact.
Any questions from the board? We might best stand on this.
Yes.
Any questions from the board?
Actually, maybe this is too far down in the weeds, but a question about the after-school buses. Have we thought about or tried to have kids reserve their seat? That's not going to be perfect. I mean, you had said at one point they reserve buses based upon how many participants they have. You know, Cedar Brook, they're doing a production, they've had football, and they've had whatever else going on. And maybe they're dispatching buses based upon the 72 kids who are there. Have we thought about trying to have parents or students reserve their ride?
That'll be a conversation that I have with the two ADs and the principal there. Where this is kind of one of those things where it's the process that's always been,
yeah.
And that's what
yeah.
you hear sometimes. Well, this is how we've always done it. Well, it's not working, so we need to fix it because it doesn't make sense. So now that we're giving them data and they actually see it,
yeah.
And so the other thing that I put out there to the principal, I said, if I keep seeing this, it's going to start coming out of your budget. It's not going to hit transportation. That's not fair to Mr. Custer's budget that you're ordering buses willy-nilly. When you start having to pay for it, I'll bet you'd be a little bit more efficient. So that's a way to kind of help that situation. For them to come up with a process,
yeah.
I don't know what process would be the best. I think that's a good idea. I think, you know, if students are participating in the production, you should have a sense of how many students are going to ride the bus. You just don't reserve buses for every single student.
40 kids, therefore we
yes.
need a...
Correct.
Well, the other thing is that would address the equity issue, too.
Correct.
If we've got students who know to ask for the bus, and
yes.
it's not like we just make buses disappear.
Correct.
Because I do think about that as well. Who's using our buses, and what does it mean when we as we cut back on buses? How does that kind of... who's able to...
And again, you know, I shared ridership information. When you see ridership, us cutting back buses is not preventing students from using them.
Yeah.
It's not having one student ride a 72-passenger bus
right.
and three students ride another one.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Any other board questions? I have a quick question, comment. First, about the busing, I think at one point the idea of maybe helping to facilitate carpooling as a creative option. Are there software pack, like if maybe there's a soft piece of software that for $2,000 a year, it's something that we could deploy to help parents just carpool more effectively, for instance. I'm just throwing that kind of thing. I wonder if there are any solutions out there that would not require us to invent something, but rather it's just out there for the community.
I know someone who dabbles in computer programming.
I
have a question for Joel on that though. If we are we
recommending carpooling? Because my question is, does that give us any type of liability? I say, hey, you ride with that, you ride with Julie, and Julie gets into an accident. Does that come back to us?
I would put it on the PTO.
Yes.
And if the PTOs organize it ad hoc, I wouldn't. It wouldn't be coming for administration, and it would be parents.
We had a parent at the last meeting that brought it up.
Yeah.
That brought up the carpooling and said, "Is there any way that we can get that word out?" And I was thinking the same thing.
UPG and PTO.
No,
because they're supposed to be weekend with software. So that's why I was trying to figure out.
I was just asking.
I think to kind of communicate to the parents. No, we're not carpooling.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. Yeah, but I put all in my face.
You're good. Sure. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. This is important. But my more.
We're not screaming the word out.
Not yet.
I did want to just take this moment to thank administration for all the time, energy, and effort in identifying this these savings. Because I know it has not been trivial. I know it will continue to be a process. And to be clear, this is essentially the proposed savings that we're looking at for the next budget. And that would, there is still potentially going to be a deficit or a need for fund balance with these identified savings. One separate question, we talked, I think, in the past, the idea of healthcare, and it's clear we're kind of maximizing healthcare. Are there any other more logistics side of things that have stones worth looking under to see if they're, I know that, for instance, the Mr. Teasdale, you were mentioning that you've been talking about energy from a sustainability perspective. Are there things like that haven't been baked into these realized savings or?
No, I mean, I think those are big areas. Like Dave and I talked about the energy piece of it, and obviously that's a big ticket item. We look at sub cost, that's a big ticket item. So, I kind of take those big areas and say, is there any way that we can be more efficient in these areas with that? It's not necessarily bidding out those things, but it's making sure, number one, that we are operating as efficient as possible on that operation side. And then, obviously, when we have the opportunity to go out to bid, to kind of take a look at things, like I think our transportation contract was one that we had talked about. Now that we're kind of in that, there's an opportunity without having to go through the bid process that we might be in a position to be in a really good position depending on how we negotiate with our current contract if we decide to go down that road. So I think it's just timing and where you're at with anything. What I'll tell you is if we go out for a transportation bid, there's no way we're getting the savings that we got the last time. And that's because that contractor wanted to keep our business. So he did what he had to do.
Oh, that makes sense. And it was more just, are there things, because I think we were surprised at the time with how much savings in that specific thing, slice, and are there other areas, and I'm sure that
we're analyzing, and I think we've kind of looked at those, and I just keep going back to the biggest piece of the pie in our budget is salaries and benefits. Right. So some of the benefit things, yes, we've looked into, but the biggest piece of benefits is PEASRs. There's nothing we can do about that.
Right.
Healthcare, I think we're maximizing it. I'm doing some research based on our conversation about if we didn't belong to CPAS, what would the rates look like? But again, we also had the conversation that your benefits are driven by what you give in your contracts. So the way to reduce benefits is to not give rich benefit plans when you're negotiating. That's the way to bring those costs down. So we continue to do that with due diligence, and I think that's all a part of, kind of what I was saying with looking at the CBAs and making sure that we're being fiscally responsible and we can afford them. So, but yes, we are doing the due diligence in the areas that we are. I will say one area that I think that we're doing very well in right now, and knock on wood, is overtime. I get a copy of every payroll sheet that comes in for overtime. By this time, I usually am on my second accordion file. I haven't filled up my first one. So I just noticed by the paperwork alone that overtime has slowed down because I think we're doing things more efficiently.
That's a credit to Mr. Teasdale.
That is a huge credit to Mr. Teasdale.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you.
So,
any questions from the public?
And I'll second that. Thank you for the effort. I've been watching from the chair of the committee's seat the effort that's gone into identifying these areas of savings, and it's been substantial and reactive to our directives, which we appreciate. Thank you.
I know one thing Ms. Michaels, we had talked about probably a couple of years ago in terms of the use of Kelly services for when staff is absent. Have we seen any spikes or changes, or has that been?
We actually went through a price increase last, no, when was Lynn's last year? It was her last year here, Lynn Davis.
Lynn Davis?
Yeah.
That's 2 years.
2 years
ago. Yeah. 2 years ago was the first time that they came at us with an increase. Adrian kind of gave me a heads up at her last HR meeting that a couple of the other districts said that there were price increases coming towards them. I don't know how we compare with other districts, so she just said just be aware that that might happen, but it hasn't been substantial in the 10 years since I've been here.
Yeah, I've just been thinking in terms of the overall cost over the year that we've spent on Kelly services, and that 1 year we were very concerned because there was a really big uptick.
The 2019-20 budget.
Okay. So again, I'm providing this information just to kind of track cost savings. And the cost savings that are being identified here that will roll into next year's budget was identified in those cost saving totals because there were some attritional savings that we had after the budget was already adopted. So I made sure that information is being rolled forward. So really the two things that have changed on this slide, I sent out an email to the board, hopefully everybody got it. We had not so good news when we went out for our bond refi. The anticipation was that we were going to get about $1.9 million in savings. I'm going to explain what happened and kind of go through that process. Because as you remember, when Brad Remick came, we talked about refunding a tax exempt and then the taxable piece. The taxable piece was the chunk of that 1.9, and that's the part that kind of went south that Tuesday that we went out for refunding. So I'll explain that in the next slide. But moving forward with that, Brad and I spoke earlier this week, and we want to move forward with the cost savings that we'll get from our tax exempt run, which is just our traditional way that we always refund the bond. So it's the 2013 bond is what we're going to refund. Anticipating we'll get about $300,000, maybe more, in savings that he can use for this fiscal year. He's going to try to get us as much as possible, but I'm using $300,000 just to kind of be on the safe side. The other thing that came through, and that this report just came out, it's preliminary because the way the IU operates and how they have to report their transportation costs, if you remember, the previous year's transportation cost hit this year's budget. So it's reflective of the 18-19 transportation cost is when we have to pay it in this fiscal year. And it comes through a subsidy deduct that we post in June. So you're not going to see this number hit until June, but the initial reports come out. It does not have the administrative overhead for the IU. So that's the piece I don't know yet, so that's why I'm saying it's preliminary. But when I do an apples-to-apples comparison of what we spent on transportation with the IU last year compared to 18-19, it's a $200,000 reduction, which is huge kudos to Mr. Custer because he has been very, very diligent in trying to analyze some of those high-cost areas of transportation and moving them over to make it a little bit cheaper. So he has shifted over some routes, and I think this was the year that he really, really made a conscious effort to really, really do that, and it paid off. So that number for the first time has gone down. Now, I'm waiting, and Mr. England as a voice for me at the IU, if our subsidy number comes in the same as it did last year, then I'm going to have a little bit of an issue because that's the markup from the IU. So. We should see a reduction in that. We just don't know what those numbers will look like. So that was a very, very big plus, and I'm very happy about that. So just to talk real quickly about the Tuesday of what happened with the tax portion of the bond refi. So as you know, Brad presented in September, we anticipated a cost of 1.9. So Tuesday, October 15th is the day that they went out. Friday, and just to back up a little bit, the underwriters were still giving PFM advisors the market outlook, saying everything looked great, anticipated the 1.9, blah, blah, blah. They get to Tuesday. Basically what happened is Tuesday they start, before they even go into any type of orders or going into the market, they were informed that the municipal market had a supply of approximately $12.5 billion. And of that, $5 billion of it was for taxable deals, which is high. Then on top of that, there were some heavy hitter deals with big organizational names. So he identified it was New York Thruway Authority and then the state of California. So that's who we're competing with to get investors to buy our issues. So basically when the underwriter went through the, you know, the period to get orders and everything, we got nothing, which has never happened since I've been here. Basically what happened and what they said happened was all the investors were so focused on those higher numbers or those higher issuers that they were just overlooking the small ones. And ours was 25 million. And Brad said, well, you don't think that that's small. The deals that were going on, because you look at the 5 billion, the investors were all focused on that and just went right over ours. So that's what happened with the taxable. He's going to continue. We have until February, because February is our next set of bond payments. So we have until then for it to impact this fiscal year. If it doesn't impact this fiscal year, there might be an opportunity for next fiscal year that we're able to do this a similar thing. He said right now when I talked to him that we're about 4 to 5 basis points away from being where we need to be to do the taxable deal with the way the market is. So he's just analyzing the market on a daily basis. And he will recommend if we want to try to go give it another shot. But our next steps is that we are going to move forward with the traditional. And he's hoping to garner about 350 to 400 in savings. He's going to try to get as much in this fiscal year as possible. But without going into a negative area, that's the part that we have to make sure that we don't take all the savings this year and then we're in a negative the following years. So they're going to have to smooth it out a little bit. So that's why I'm estimating about $300,000 in savings for this year. So again, he relayed that we have until February 2020 to do taxable. That's where we are, and he's just going to monitor it. And if we have the ability to go back out again, then he will recommend it. But the deals that were being given, he just didn't. He spoke to me that day. You know, obviously he was not happy, but he just said they were, you know, he could have gotten a deal done, but it wasn't what we presented to the board. So he contacted me and said, listen, I can still try to get it, but it means refining the bonds. The other big one was how we were locked into the 10-year, and then it would go back to tax exempt. They were trying to lock us in for the life of the bond. And so I said, no, that's not what we presented to the board. So just bail out and we'll go back out if we have the opportunity. So just wanted to give you an update on that. And I adjusted numbers so that that 1.9 is not folded in, but 300 is folded in, so that gives us a better outlook. Unanticipated expenditures, nothing's changed right now. I reported this last meeting about the $50,000. I've netted that against the IU anticipated savings from the transportation costs, so we have a net savings of about $149,850. So just taking a look at this slide, we're pretty much right on track with everything. If you look in the projected year end, the areas that I'm putting asterisks next to are the areas where we have the cost savings that I'm talking about in the first slide. The other thing, if you remember from last meeting, built into benefits in the actual budget, I have a saving mechanism if we're going to take it. I took it out just so that you can see those numbers. We can make that decision before the end of the fiscal year to determine whether or not we want to take that $900 and some thousand dollar savings by doing a premium holiday in this fiscal year. So that would give us almost close to $1 million in savings if we decided to do that.
And that's not built in.
And it's not built in, no. So I'm relaying it as it is right now and not building that in, because if we decide to hold on to that and not do that, I think we need to see where budget is landing to see if we want to save that for next year and just move on with where we are and just keep trying to see where the savings are coming in and go from there. So that's just decision making as we get through the budget.
Can that be done, Jeff? How often can that be done?
So it's dependent upon your reserves, where your reserves are. So your healthcare reserves with CPAS. So we took one last year. So that was 1 month's worth. At the time, we had 3 months worth of reserves that we could take in holidays on. They don't recommend that you do that, deplete it down to the point where you don't have the reserve balance. I think they like you to keep at least one there, so we have the opportunity for another one. But it's all dependent upon where your reserves are. And they have a policy built in place on when you can take it and where your levels are. And just this is the other piece, the other slide. And just another thing, I'm working very, very closely with the special ed department to really track special ed numbers. So I'm actually very obsessed about it, because I'm very happy about it, because I'm all over the place to make sure that we're right in line with where we want to be. So there's been some, I'm very happy that I'm confident in those numbers, and I know that we're up to date with everything, and I have kind of a pulse on where we are with the special ed piece. So that's about it.
Any questions from the board?
The cyber charter.
Yep.
Cyber charter. What's in that number? The $1.1 million.
And the tuition cyber charter. So those are our charter school payments.
And we have a breakdown of the cyber versus.
Mm-hmm. It's not broken out in the budget because PD doesn't require you to do that, so it's all lumped together. But we do.
Dr. Horsey said that to me, but I had a question on how many of the 56 students are actually in
bricks and mortar.
In brick and mortar. So that's me following up with her. But we did get a list of students who are in charter schools. I just don't know, I have the breakdown of whether or not that Excel spreadsheet is that 56 brick and mortar, or out of that 56, are they divided between between cyber?
I think it's divided.
Yes.
56 is the makeup of
of that number.
So that's 56 students, but we don't know right here at the table what the breakdown is.
Cyber and charter, no. And it's also combined between special education and gen ed, because right now what we pay to a charter school for gen ed is about $19,000 and some change. Special ed is about $41,000.
Yeah. So roughly, Bill, and because I don't know, it identified approximately 12, 14, 15, 16, 20 students who are part of that cyber charter. I will verify, but it would appear that on the Excel spreadsheet, it's identified as a cyber. And right now, there are, that number I just gave you, those are the total numbers. But I'll verify.
Or cyber and how many?
The remaining are brick and mortar.
So it's about 20 cyber.
Total 56.
There's 30.
So
that's 20 students at $19,000 a year are sitting at home on their computers doing cyber charter. Because we don't differentiate. That's one of the things that we've been lobbying hard. If we lobbied, we would be lobbying hard in Harrisburg about trying to get a different rate there.
And there's a number of providers. There's Agora Cyber Charter, Esperanza Cyber, Insight Charter, there's PA Cyber Charter, PA Distance Learning, PA Virtual Charter, and Reach Cyber Charter.
So I know Gore is one of our heavy hitters. We have a lot of students there, and I think the PA.
The PA virtual charter is a heavy hitter.
Yeah.
There are approximately 12 students who are in that.
What about our ODPN? Have students used them?
Yes.
Yes, they have. Yes.
At one point, we were going to try to establish our own.
We get DPN.
Is that formally the Cheltenham Cybers?
We were going to some extent, but not the way in which. Not the way in which we offer a program that would entice
to get them back.
X number of students to come back and say, okay, I'm going to go through that process. There is, I was very interested, but it does cost a significant amount of upfront. Yep. There is a certification through University of Pennsylvania, it's called Vault, and it trains your teachers how to design and run a cyber experience, which then would allow them to create that space, which would mean that if we had educators, for example, who didn't have a full schedule, one of those sections that they should have had, and they no longer have five sections of teaching because of whatever reason, we could assign them a cyber experience, and they would be responsible for supporting virtually X number of students in that, but I'm sure that would be a collective bargaining conversation to do that.
Yeah. But thank you for the charter info. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but let me double check with you so I'm reading it correctly.
Because if somebody is committed to us for five periods a day, and they have three, because we can't fill five classes that they have a certification in, then why would we need to pay them any more or change anything with collective bargaining? I mean, I'm just asking the question. It's certainly worth asking.
You're asking at the wrong table. I mean, it might be this table, but Jeff would be there.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we
it might be interesting
to
follow
could ask
Jeff
that question.
I have him ask
Deborah.
Thank you. The only area where I see that we're trending higher is in benefits. Mm-hmm. And was that something expected in there, or was that?
That's where I pulled back the savings. So I think it's like 980. I originally had that it's built into the budget, but I pulled it out to see if we could try to not use it and see how we're trending without it. But that's why I think I reported at the last meeting that our benefits should trend at a certain percent of our salaries. And right now it's trending higher because I pulled back on the savings.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Seeing no other any questions from the public, I have one quick comment so I don't forget it.
Is there another slide?
I believe this is the first month that we actually have projections.
Last month was.
So I would love to see, we had talked about it once, but having an actual timeline graph so we can see how things are coalescing to a final number, which just tells a story that's worth reflecting. And I think that's it. Is there a motion to?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.